You spend a lot of your life feeling anxious, and I know that because I spent the majority of my life feeling anxious, waiting for the other shoe to fall, thinking worst case scenario in every situation, trying to be perfect to see if that would make me feel better, more confident. And I see you doing that too. I see you doing all those things. And because we're so jacked up in the moment and we want instant relief, we're usually trying to solve the question, how do I reduce my anxiety and my drama-filled mind in the moment, in the right now? But there are some really important things that you can do while you're not in the moment, while you're not already searching for the panic button. And today's guest, Heather Lillico, is used to dealing with overthinking, people-pleasing perfectionists. I'm not saying you're those things. I'm just saying that you might want to hang around because she's going to reveal how to manage anxiety naturally while you're not in meltdown mode. And also, you want to make sure you stick around to the end because she's going to reveal her number one tip that you should be doing to reduce anxiety. So let's get to it. Welcome, Heather.
Thanks, Shannon. Thanks for having me. And thanks for calling out that piece on perfectionism because you're right. A lot of us wear it like a badge of honor, right? We wear that busyness like a badge of honor. And I'm here to break down some of those pieces around what might be the not so good side of perfectionism, right? The side that keeps us from reaching success, that fear of failure and the constant busyness and the constant overthinking, like all of that, I think needs to be talked about with perfectionism too.
Yeah. Well, I want to dive into the overthinking part because when we suffer from extreme jealousy, like someone who's listening to this podcast, that's all we do is think all day long, every day, thinking about the same things, thinking about the same thing I thought about yesterday, the same thing that I worried about yesterday 50 times a day. Tell us, like, why are we overthinking so much? What's going on?
Yeah. Okay. So the overthinking is coming from some of the limiting beliefs that a lot of us have. And what I see as the most common limiting beliefs are that the deep feeling that I'm not good enough or I'm scared that people are going to leave or abandon me. A lot of the overthinking patterns can be traced back to that. And those types of beliefs develop when we're kids, right? When the subconscious mind is forming, we receive these messages from our caregivers, from the world, and we sort of internalize that and we start to run these beliefs as scripts. So it becomes this story that we tell ourselves, right? It's like this filter we run everything through. So let's say, for example, your partner doesn't text you back and you're starting to overthink like, oh, what's going on? Or are they not going to text me back? Have I done something to offend them? Are they going to leave me? There's like that 0 to 100 kind of spiral, right? That we get stuck in that loop. And what's happening there is that deeper belief is being activated. That fear of, oh my gosh, what if I'm going to be left? I'm going to be abandoned and alone, right? That would feel so scary to younger version of you. So what's happening there is like the younger version of ourselves is coming online. That's what's driving the bus in the moment. And we don't want a 6-year-old driving a bus, right? That's not a way to live and not a safe way. So really, it's coming from these sort of limiting beliefs. And our job is to bring a greater awareness to it and disrupt some of those patterns that are going on and reprogram what we do want to believe about ourselves.
I like the comparison of the 6-year-old driving the bus because we are so good at surviving situations when we're young, especially, you know, I didn't know it, of course, until I started doing this work. Of how really well I did at surviving, living in a household where there was abuse, living with an alcoholic father, being embarrassed of where we lived and how we lived and the things that went on and not being able to have friends over, like all of that kind of stuff, and still going to school every day and trying to learn history and math. Yeah. You get really good at figuring out how to survive, but then we don't go back and go, do I still need to do that? Right?
Yeah, right. Like, is that accurate? And the thing about the subconscious mind that is so interesting is that it doesn't care if you're happy. It's only caring about that survival piece, right? So if the way that you have survived since you were a kid is by preparing yourself to be left or abandoned, then that's great. It's done its job and it's helped you survive to this point. But what we're trying to do now as adults is with that more conscious mind being like, hey, wait a sec, is that belief serving me? Like, is that something that I still want to believe about myself? And can I dismantle some of that, right? And really dive back to see like, well, where does this come from? Why would I believe that about myself? And then is that true? Is that helpful? And is that still what I want to believe? Or perhaps I want to shift and believe, you know what, I am good enough, or like I have myself and that's enough, or people aren't going to leave or abandon me. I do have good people in my life. Like if we can kind of get to that state, then we can, you know, make that 6-year-old go offline, that 6-year-old no longer driving the bus, we're taking over and living really from like our higher self.
Right. And I think also, okay, maybe all of those things that we are worried about still could happen, but they maybe wouldn't affect us the same way that they did when I was 6 or I was 12 or I was 22. Even you can be different at different stages of your life and learn, okay, yes, this happened before. Maybe it'll happen again, but I also know how to handle this situation when it comes up, or I know it's not going to break me if this comes up. My husband and I were just having a conversation because there's a situation currently going on in our lives that's triggering for me of things that have happened in the past, in my past relationships. And I have to think, even if it does play out, right, the same way that it's played out before, doesn't mean that I'm going to feel the same way about it, that I'm going to respond the same way about it, or that, you know, doesn't mean my life's going to blow up, right?
Yeah.
Because I'm not 6 anymore, or 12, or 20, however old.
Right, exactly. And what I've seen with anxiety is that we overestimate the likelihood that something is going to happen, and then we underestimate our ability to deal with it. We think that this scenario is 100% going to happen, and also I'm not going to be able to deal with it. But the reality is that you've dealt with it up until this point, right? You've survived up until this point, so you can deal with it. But it's sort of retraining ourselves to see like we can handle hard things, that even if this outcome happens, I'm still going to be okay. I've still got myself.
What is the biggest mistake in managing anxiety? Because I know you talk about that, like we make some mistakes in managing anxiety. What's the biggest one?
The biggest mistake that I've seen when people are managing anxiety is making it be their whole identity. Because it's really hard to shift something if it is your entire identity, because you're going to try to act in alignment with that identity. So when people are saying things like, I'm just an anxious person, I'm always going to feel this way, then yeah, you're probably going to be stuck in that pattern. And there's this really cool study where they had people who were smoking, and these people wanted to quit smoking. And so they divided them into two groups. And they had one group of people say, when they were offered a cigarette, they had them say, no thanks, I'm trying to quit. And then they had the other group of people say, when they were offered a cigarette, no thanks, I don't smoke. And see how those are slight identity differences there, right? I'm not a smoker. And the group that said, no thanks, I don't smoke, they had a higher success rate when it came to quitting long term. So if we can shift the type of words that we're saying and say, hey, yeah, maybe I experience the feeling of anxiety, right? But that's not who I am. That's not at my core, who I'm going to be long term. And what I've seen with clients is that the ones that have the most success have that willingness to see the shift, to identify as something different, and to change that language to say, I'm having a feeling of anxiety right now, instead of I'm anxious. So it's a small language shift, but I think it can change the way that we're perceiving anxiety and get out of that, like, you know, just trying to manage and sort of be at war with it, and really shift into something a bit different.
Very interesting, because I have a big sweet tooth. I always have. My biggest problem is sugar. It's as addictive or more than heroin. They did this like test on these rats, and these heroin addicted rats, and then they gave them sugar and they let the rats decide, and the rats always went for sugar after that. So it's like, holy crud. So you can say things differently, like, no thanks, I don't eat sweets, or I'm trying to quit sweets. There's two way different things. And so that's a kind of psychology piece I've been working on. I don't eat sweets.
Yeah.
Versus, right. But there's a really good reason that I'm not doing that. You talk about calming foods for anxiety. I'm very interested to hear what those are. So can we switch gears into that?
Yes, let's talk about food because it's such an underrated piece when it comes to anxiety. I don't think a lot of us make the link between what we're eating and how we're feeling. And not only are there foods that are going to worsen anxiety, like sugar, you mentioned, caffeine is another one, any type of food sensitivity. It, in my practice, the most common one I see is dairy, that it doesn't agree with a lot of people. Red meat as well, we want to be cautious of because it is an inflammatory to the body. And alcohol as well can affect our inflammation levels. So there are foods that could worsen anxiety, but there are also ones that can make it better. And these are our calming foods. So I'm not about like, okay, let's totally restrict and limit everything in the diet and, you know, have zero fun. I still want people to eat like whole, nutritious foods. But what could we add in to the diet that's actually going to help anxiety? So things.
Well, and before you go there, I'm so glad that you said the alcohol because I tell people like, okay, you can drink, but it's probably going to make things worse. So thank you for being the downer with me saying it's probably not a good thing to do.
So. Yeah. And I mean, I think a lot of us know, you know, the next day after having some drinks, there's that kind of anxiety that comes up, right? There's that. And like physiologically, there are things happening in the body that's causing that. When we're having alcohol, it's reducing GABA, our main relaxing neurotransmitter in the brain. It's going to burn through your B vitamins, which are like your mood and energy vitamins. So some of that could be offset with, you know, if I am going to have a couple drinks the next day, I'm going to have some supplements that is going to offset some of that and lessen those feelings of anxiety. But also, you know, thinking about like, what are we using alcohol for? Is it that we're feeling anxious and we want to numb out and we don't want to process what's going on? Then it's really just like a short-term Band-Aid solution. And usually most people find the anxiety pings back the next day with full force.
Right. Because there's that fine line between having it to calm down or maybe there's a situation that you're worried about. And then that fine line into, okay, now it's went too far and it's now causing issues, right?
Yeah, right. And it can lead to the overthinking as well. If anyone has ever had too much and the next day you start thinking about every interaction you had yesterday and, oh my gosh, did I say something awkward or weird or why did I do that? And right, there's like that kind of rumination that comes along with it. And, you know, specifically for our listeners on this podcast, I would bet perhaps that jealousy comes out more when we're drinking or that, you know, that paranoia, that questioning of what's happening.
Yeah. And then they're dealing with, oh my gosh, I really went too far. My actions were even more heightened than what they would have been because, you know, when you're drinking, you have less control over your emotions and your actions anyway. And then even more so the guilt that comes, you know, the next day.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Absolutely. Yeah. So let's talk about calming foods.
Yeah.
So calming foods, these are like real whole foods that anybody can work in. So one of the best categories when it comes to foods for anxiety are nuts and seeds. So things like walnuts, almonds, pistachios, hemp seeds, flax, chia, sunflower, pumpkin, any of those. The reason they're great for mood is that they're rich in magnesium. And magnesium is our calming mineral. It's involved in over 300 reactions in the body. It has links to helping sleep, has links to muscle relaxation as well. So if you feel that kind of tension build up in the muscles, magnesium is great for that. They're also rich in zinc, and zinc is great for immunity, but also for mood as well. And they usually, nuts and seeds usually have a good amount of fat in them that's sort of stabilizing for our blood sugar and our mood, right? And we want to keep our blood sugar stable in order to feel calm and more balanced. So nuts and seeds are incredible and pretty easy to work in, right? Like grabbing a handful throughout the day, sprinkling them on salads, adding them to smoothies. Pretty easy for us to try to get in a handful of those a day. And then we have other calming foods. So your leafy greens are going to be good for calming. They're rich in folate, which is a B vitamin, great for mood. And I usually suggest going like the darker and richer colors. So kale is great, Swiss chard, collard greens, as opposed to like an iceberg or romaine lettuce, maybe not as many antioxidants in there. We really want to pack a punch when it comes to diet, right? We only get so many opportunities in a day to get these nutrients in. So we have to make sure that each meal is thoughtfully planned out to incorporate as many nutrients as we can.
Yes. One thing I just learned that I love is arugula. No idea. Ooh, I didn't know. Know a lot of people.
It's spicy.
I like the kick of it too. So I was like, okay, that's good. That's a greener. You know, I'm going greener.
Yes, going green. Yes, yes. Yeah. That's a great one. And you know, we can think sort of outside of the box as well, like mustard greens or beet greens or radish greens. Like these can be thrown into soups or smoothies and like blended up so you're not even tasting them. Even something like dandelion greens, those pests, right, that grow everywhere in the summertime, the green part of them, that it has incredible nutritional value, really detoxifying for the body. So helps our liver, you know, make sure that we're detoxifying things like heavy metals, for example, that can, a buildup of that can lead to anxiety. Like there are nutritionally things that can happen in our body that are leading to us feeling more anxious. So our diet can kind of circumvent that.
Love it. Okay. So we have nuts and seeds. We have leafy greens.
Yeah. Let's talk about one more. So fermented foods like kefir, yogurt, kimchi, sauerkraut, kombucha, these all contain live bacteria and they're going to support the bacteria in your gut. And we have a couple kilograms worth of bacteria in our gut and different strains do different things. And there's a really exciting area of research right now showing that certain strains of bacteria actually help anxiety and help our mood and help us feel calm. So a lot of the bacteria your gut can help make some of your neurotransmitters. And there's also this communication going on between gut and brain. And it's bidirectional, which is really exciting, meaning that if you work on your gut health, your anxiety will improve. If you work on calming anxiety and stress, your gut health will also improve, which is relevant because a lot of people who are suffering from anxiety also have digestive issues, whether it be bloating, heartburn, IBS,
right?
Issues of transit time, too fast, too slow. I mean, people probably know if you feel anxious, like the stomach is going to be affected.
Yeah. You've got the stomach ache. You've got your like, ugh, I don't feel good all the way around, right?
Yeah. Or people like running to the bathroom. I know when I used to have public speaking events and I would get really nervous for them, like right up until speaking, I was in the bathroom. I was just like waiting. Or, you know, people's appetite as well. Like, when we're feeling anxious, a lot of people will report that they just have no appetite. So we know that the gut is linked with anxiety and with our mood. And what's so exciting about that is if we work on one, the other will improve too.
Have fear and lack of confidence taken over your life? Is your constant anxiety keeping you distracted, holding you back from a successful career, a healthy relationship free of jealousy, or living the life you know you were meant to have? If you're ready to relax your mind, achieve change, and be a healthier, more present you, then book your free 30-minute discovery call today to see how I can help. I let my feelings of low self-worth get in the way for far too long, but I discovered a path to a calmer mind, learned how to be confident in my relationship, allowing me to feel present again in my own life. If you're looking to take your relationship or your career to the next level, or you just want to accelerate your journey to your top self, the link to book your free discovery call is in the show notes. Now back to the show.
Wonderful. That is exciting. That's great to hear because, there's ways that you can work on both, you know, so you can do meditation or, you know, whatever it is that you like to use to work on your anxiety at the same time, incorporating some of these foods that you've shared with us today in helping our gut. So awesome. Well, there's also along that same vein, there's exercises, right? So I know there are types of exercises that disrupt hormone balance and things that we should probably do instead. So let's talk about that.
Yeah, let's talk about exercise because at least the people that I work with are recovering perfectionists and there's that tendency to want to go so hard with exercise. And there's that mentality of like exercise is punishment. If I'm not absolutely exhausted and sore from every muscle group, then I haven't worked hard enough, right? I haven't achieved. Yeah. And I want to reframe that for people because especially if you're experiencing anxiety, you know, you're having a lot of overthinking, you're feeling overwhelmed, your hormones are already stressed out. Your main stress hormone, your cortisol, is going to be high. And we want to help regulate that and bring it down to a more balanced place. And so if we're doing really intense workouts like, you know, CrossFit, circuit training, boot camp, HIIT, any of those, it's going to affect your hormones if you're already tending towards that burnout zone. And, you know, for years, I would do these types of workouts and I found that I was getting exhausted by doing them and I was getting injured. It was really hard to recover from them. And so we can explore different types of movement, movement that feels really good for the body. And, you know, if someone is a runner or they really enjoy lifting weights or being in the gym, that's fine. You can do that, but maybe it's not every day. And maybe we explore other types of lower intensity types of movement, like walking is one of the best that we have out there. So good for mental health. There's continually studies showing that between 20 to 30 minutes a day of a little faster than a stroll, that can improve mental health and reduce depression and anxiety. Activities like yoga, that's so great for the nervous system and helping us connect in a different way to our body and our breath. For me, I was used to doing boot camps and really intense classes, and I really didn't have that connection to my body and breath. And yoga was sort of like a retraining of that to better understand like how I could slow down, and that it really helped me in a way sort of process emotions differently than I was used to, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I know the intense workout, like for me, it would spike my blood sugar level like so high where it actually, like you said, wasn't good for me to do that intense of a workout and as often as I was doing them. Cause, you know, I was hitting it hard, you know, like you were talking about, like I'm going all out, I'm doing it all. And what I found is it's better to not do that for me, for my body. So
yeah, and that's what I've seen with a lot of clients is that if there's that mentality behind exercise that we have to burn a certain amount of calories or like, you know, that's going to put the body in a state of stress, right? And then what usually comes along with that is guilt, is falling off some sort of bandwagon. And what I want for people is something that you can do long term, right? Something that feels so nourishing and supportive for the body that it's not something that feels like work. It's not another thing on the to-do list, and it's not something that you're going to fall off of. It's just part of the fabric of who you are, right? That's the identity piece that we were talking about earlier, is like, I'm a person who moves my body in a way that feels good. Like that's the new identity that we're bringing into this year.
Yeah, I love it. Okay, last thing then, what is your like number one tip that we should be doing to try to reduce our anxiety?
So I think, you know, we haven't really addressed the mindset piece, and that is probably the key to it all, is bringing in practices that help us regulate our thoughts and emotions and relate to them differently. And that comes from the practice of meditation. So doing, you know, a guided meditation every day, and it doesn't have to be long, like 2 to 3 minutes. That's typically what I work with clients, is like under 5 minutes. Because I think we can all carve out that time in a day. But the reason meditation works so well for anxiety is it really helps you disrupt that cycle of overthinking and rumination and getting stuck in the worry loop. And it helps you relate differently to your thoughts and your emotions, right? We can, in meditation, we practice finding a bit of detachment from the thought, the emotion, and sort of like seeing it pass over us. You know, maybe it's like a cloud in a sky, that thought is going by. And so we don't have to identify so intensely with it and get so gripped by it. And it's the same with emotions. Like we can feel, where do I feel that in the body, and bring in that element of curiosity into it, but not get taken over by it. And I think with anxiety, the fear is that the anxiety is going to be so overwhelming that I can't cope with it. It's like the fear of, you know, if I go do this, if I go to the concert, if I go hang out with the friends, if my partner leaves me, it's going to be so overwhelming that I won't be able to handle it. And so we end up not doing those activities. We end up living this kind of small life. And meditation gives us this tool that helps us be able to process some of this and see that, you know, we can handle it, that it's going to be okay. There's so many different resources out there for meditation. I mean, there's free ones on YouTube, but like it doesn't have to be an expensive thing to pick up and to learn. But really just to dip your toe in the water and see, because I find with at least the people that I work with, the perfectionists, is that there's that fear of I'm going to be bad at meditation. And so wanting to, you know, be good at it the first time. And so I would say to people, like, there's no such thing as a bad meditation. I mean, I've been meditating for over 10 years and I'm still constantly catching myself wandering with my mind and coming back over and over. But it is a practice that you can grow and learn. And there's so many resources on YouTube. I mean, I have an app that has meditation on it that can direct people specifically like for anxiety, but to just really start to explore this world and get consistent with it, I think that would be the greatest tip I have for people in terms of anxiety.
Yeah. And because the feelings, I mean, the feelings aren't going to cause any damage. I think we, like you were saying, we get so afraid that, oh my gosh, I can't go to this thing because I'm not going to be able to handle it, or, you know, this event and I can't handle it. It's like the feelings aren't the problem. The feelings aren't going to kill you, right? But the stress of being worried about not being able to get through it, now that can, right? So it's like the feelings are just feelings.
Yeah. It takes the significance out of them. Not that feelings aren't important. I mean, I think that feelings are sort of signposts and they're there to let us know something and say, hey, this is going on. This is that, you know, that deeper limiting belief that's being activated. I think that's relevant and important, but maybe knowing that we have so many emotions and feelings throughout the day, we don't have to focus on each one and examine, you know, its full significance. We can have that, oh, you know what? I'm having a feeling of anxiety right now. Okay. And as we're recording this on a Monday, so yesterday was Sunday, and I started to have that feeling of like the Sunday scaries coming in yesterday, right? Thinking, oh my gosh, I have a busy week. Like, did I relax too much this weekend? Should I have been working? Right. And you know, some of that started to come in. And so what I did is I just paused. I said, okay, I'm having a feeling of anxiety right now. It's a little bit uncomfortable. You know, I can feel that my heart is starting to be fast and I'm having some more rapid thoughts. And I could just sort of bring in a bit of compassion to that to say, like, it's just a feeling. It'll pass. It's not dangerous to feel this way. It's uncomfortable. We can acknowledge that. But I think that approach can help us move through that emotion a lot quicker.
Yes, I love it. Okay, so you have an app. Will you tell us how people can get it? How can they reach you?
Sure, happy to share. Absolutely. So the app is called Cultivating Calm, and it's a community that really helps to put some of these practices that we talked about today, to put them into habits. So it includes a library of meditations, yoga classes, recipes, like targeted mood boosting recipes. And it also has courses on the app that include just spending a couple minutes each day to regulate the nervous system and help get people results. Because I think for most of us, we don't have hours every day to spend on self-care. And I know anxiety can be overwhelming, right? It really takes us out of the moment and occupies our thoughts, and it can be exhausting. So I wanted to create something for people that feels really manageable to be able to work into the day, and that helps people be more present and build up those skills so that they can feel more confident. So if anyone wants to check out Cultivating Calm, you can head to the App Store and type in Cultivating Calm. It's also on Google Play for Android. And there's a free 2-week trial that anybody can sign up for and just start to play around with these resources and really start to build that presence, that confidence.
Awesome. Well, yes, let's go check it out. We're going to check out the app and take advantage of that and see how it works for us. So thank you so much, Heather Lillico. I appreciate you being on Top Self.
Thank you for having me, Shannon.